All right, Nevin, here it comes. When I was a little kid, I kind of had this problem, and it's not even that big of a deal. Something like 8% of kids do it, but whatever. It's, for some reason, I don't know why, just kind of sit around all day and draw pictures of dicks.
What?
Draw pictures of dicks.
Welcome to What the Nostalgia, the podcast where we go back and review movies from our formative years on up to our late teens. At the end of the podcast, we ask ourselves, were we looking at the content through rose-colored lens, or is it as nostalgic as before? We're your host, Jarrell.
And I'm Jamel.
Jamel, what we got?
Today, we had a Superbad. This was released August 17th, 2007. It was directed by Greg Mottola. For the cast, we have Jonah Hill, Michael Cera, Christopher Mintz, Emma Stone, Seth Rogen, and Bill Hader. And for the box office, they had a $20 million budget and grossed over $170 million worldwide.
Okay. All right. Hey, it was about time we got to this movie, man. You know, this is what...
Classic.
Exactly. This was the whole reason, you know. This is what we've been working up to, basically. So, how many thousands of times have you seen this?
Not as much as you, but I will say I've seen it a lot. It's definitely a top comedy film for me. And, you know, besides the fact that, you know, I've seen it recently, but even before that, I'd say maybe a year. It's been maybe a year top since I've seen it. What about you?
Yeah, this is one of those movies I watch often. Way, maybe too often. Yeah, I've seen it within, I don't know, probably the past month or so. Incredibly funny movie, man. And it's got, you know, it's a great cast that they put together. This movie hits, man. This movie is hitting. It's one of the funniest that, you know, out there. I want to talk about this soundtrack, man, real quick. This movie has one of the best soundtracks as well. I don't know if you agree with that. What do you think? I'm saying.
Well, to be honest, I haven't really heard the soundtrack. I mean, I've heard like the songs throughout the film.
I mean, yeah, that's the sound. Come on now.
Really know. Yeah, but I'm saying I don't think they play every single song from the soundtrack in the film. That's what I'm saying. I haven't heard the whole soundtrack, so I can't really speak on it. But from what I've heard, I mean, I wouldn't say that.
Wow, you disrespectful son of a. I'm not even going to do it. But the point is,
what makes it so great?
What do you mean what makes it so great? First off, this movie put me on to some good songs, okay? Usually when you got these raunchy teen comedies, man, they always go the route of the college rock, the heavy metal music or something like that. This was they decided to go an opposite route and say, hey, we're going straight 70s with this teen comedy, and it worked perfectly. This music, every song in there was hitting. You don't have to hear the rest. I'm not saying every single song is going to be top notch, but the songs that you heard in there, you can't tell me it didn't fit perfectly with the movie and with their shenanigans and all of that.
The intro song was hitting for sure, but I mean, the in between, it matched the movie, but. I can't really say that that makes the songs great themselves. I think sometimes you got to separate it from the actual art. So with the movie, it matches, so it goes together. But that doesn't mean I'm going to listen to it without the film. Like I said, that's just, I never really listen to the soundtrack. I just know what they play in the film for the most part.
I'm just saying it matches perfectly. It goes. Okay, yeah,
I'm not disagreeing with you. You didn't shape your question that way. I'm not disagreeing with that. It does fit with the film, yeah, of course, but
So
I don't really know all the songs on the soundtrack.
So then it's a great soundtrack. If the music fits well, that means it's a great soundtrack. Okay.
The music they chose to put in the film fits, yes, but they didn't play the full soundtrack on the film.
Oh my goodness.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't listen to the whole soundtrack.
I'm ready to cut your mic, man. That's what I'm ready to. Like, you're gonna disrespect this. Like I said, this they put you straight into the mood. Every cutscene, everything, all the songs that they played, it just fit really well. And then that opening, like you said, I mean the dance that they're doing from the beginning, that's iconic to the music that they're doing it to. The little silhouette dance that they got going on. This movie, they scored it perfectly with the music, is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, I figure, you know, this in your top five, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, I know you're going to have high praises for sure. It's a great film, though. I mean, I'm not even going to front on it. I mean, it's a timeless comedy. I mean, I can't even debate against it. It's a great film, you know. Soundtrack-wise, though, I can't get with you, man.
Well, you know, hey, that's how we gonna do, man. We gonna differ, you know.
Yeah, not just time to happen.
I'm coming at you hard, you know. I can't wait to hear what you think is the best soundtrack. What movie you gonna say? Oh yeah, this hits. Okay.
Well, see,
because I'm gonna be in full disagreement mode.
Yeah, so you shouldn't have said that. Now I'm not even gonna bring that out. I'm gonna just keep it to myself and enjoy the music.
All right, that's fine. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to go ahead and get into it,
man? Yeah, yeah, let's do it. You know, you talk about the opening scene. I kind of look at the opening credit scene as well as a part of the opening. That's what makes this film so great as far as the opening. But they have a little convo between the two. Seth is driving to Evan's house to pick him up for school. You can already tell they're setting up their friendship, you know, right from the beginning. And one thing that I noticed, you know, from the jump, you know you're close to somebody if you're talking to them on the phone and you're pulling up to the same location they're at and they're literally walking to the car still on the phone with you. Like, they were setting up their whole friendship from the beginning. So that's one of the things I noticed. And they were also set up the differences between the two at the same time, I think. You know, Seth being the more raunchy one, Evan being a little bit more conservative. So those are just some of the things that stuck out for me during the beginning, man. What about you?
Yeah, yeah. I love, you know, that maybe the first 15 minutes or so, they setting up the friendship, you know, the closeness. And I agree with you on that, the fact that two people could be on the phone even while all the way up until they absolutely come into contact with each other or whatever. That is a good sign of like a great friendship, I guess. See, I'm going back to that iconic dance scene that I was talking about when we're talking about setting up characters. Look, in that dance scene, I got everything that I needed to know even without them even saying a word. All I needed to do was just see them two dancing. And I said to myself, okay, I know what I'm in for both of these guys, just from some of the moves that they were doing. And so I felt like that was genius, even with that part, where I was like, okay, I already kind of get a feel for who these characters are. But yeah, that phone scene, that did add to it and everything. And but they also set up a little something in that intro too, in the beginning scene, where you can tell they're good friends, but they have a little, let me see how to put it. It's like there's a little barrier where they're not confessing it all the way. Because if you notice, when the mom says something to, what is it, Seth? And she's like, yeah, I know that you didn't get into the, you know, like the same school or whatever. And, she's like, it's almost like she's concerned about it. Like, she said something to the effect of, are you guys going to miss each other? And they had to front, they had to kind of play it off a little bit. Like, no, we don't miss each other. No, ill or whatever. And I don't know. I just thought that was funny at first, where two friends kind of got to fake the funk a little bit. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they basically they got into two different colleges, and from the beginning, like you said, they kind of set that up pretty quickly. You know, through the mom, Evan's mom, kind of throwing that out there a little bit. So you're right, man. From the beginning of this film, all the way through. I mean, we're gonna get into a lot more, but they throw these little Easter eggs in there for you as far as their friendship. You know, the disconnects, the differences between the two, but also why they're so close as well. So it was a lot of Easter eggs, man, and that definitely was one of those from the beginning. You know, those concerns is definitely there. I got to hit on the intentions of these two guys, man. I mean, and this is pretty much the whole gist of the film and why they end up going on this journey throughout the film. You know, basically, they set it up, and this is from the beginning as well. They really want to lose their virginity. They want to have sex before they go off to college or before they graduate high school. That's the big goal for the two of them. And even in that, and I feel like we can find these differences in all of these situations they get into, and you know, throughout this film. Even in that, you can still tell that Seth is, like, really... like, he wants it even more, like, versus Evan. Like, Evan is more, like, the nice guy type of dude. And Seth is kind of like the, you know, bros before hoes type of dude. You know, and you can kind of tell that from the beginning as well. The way that they talk and the, you know, between the dialogue that the two have, so.
Well, yeah, it was good that they set them up, you know. They both got their extremes, I mean. They're both very different people, but also you understand why they're friends. Like, I get it. You know what I'm saying? And dealing with what you were saying, pretty much the plot of the movie, yeah, about them, we kind of really going into it about them trying to get liquor for this party so they could get with these two girls. We got to mention that. They both have two women that they're trying to get with. I believe Seth is trying to get with, who's he trying to get with? Jewel. And Evan is trying to get with this girl, Becca. So they both got their eyes set on both of them. And they believe the way that they can make this happen is through this fake ID that they wind up trying to get through another character so they can get, yeah, liquor for the party.
Right, right. Yeah, that's one thing we definitely got to hit on. The legend of McLovin, man. I mean, this character, to me, made a big part of this film. And they introduce him. He's introduced epically, in my opinion. First off, they're in this, what was it, like a cooking class? I forget exactly what it's called, but
Home ec.
It was a cooking class. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's where... Seth gets invited to the party by Jules because they're partnered up with everybody in the class, and Jules' partner isn't there for the day. So the teacher allows Seth to partner with Jules. And they get into a conversation, and Jules invites him to a party. She says her parents are gone for the weekend. She's throwing a big party, right? So that sparks everything at that point. He goes and tells Evan about it, and that's when McLovin comes in. He enters into the movie. And through him is the way that they want to try to get this fake ID to get the alcohol. Now, what was funny to me, the funniest part of that whole thing was Seth didn't want to tell Fogle or McLovin about the party. His real name was Fogle in the film, but he went by McLovin. He didn't want to tell McLovin about the party until McLovin told them about the fake ID. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, you can tell Seth kind of, you know, uses Fogle to his advantage when he can or whatever, and that he's not really great friends with him or whatever. But I wanna rewind just a little bit, man, and go back to something that sometimes you don't catch stuff until like the end, or I mean until like the 1,000th watch or whatever. And I never really paid attention to this. You remember like early on in the movie where Evan and Seth, they came from the store, whatever store they went to, and the little bully guy, he comes up and is like, "Hey, I'm having a party," and he tells him that y'all can't come, and he spits on Seth.
Yeah, Big Luby.
That guy's name was Jesse, right? So now you skip forward just like a couple of minutes later into the movie, and when Becca is talking to Evan, she asks him, she's like, "Hey, are you coming to Jesse's party next week or whatever?" And he's like, "It's a maybe." Even though he already knows what Jesse.
I didn't catch that. I've seen this movie a billion times. I never caught that.
Exactly. There's something else.
Small detail.
Right. There's something else I'm going to ask you a little later on. But, if you caught. But that was one where I was like, wow. The same way that you just said, as many times as I watched this, I never thought about it. So it was just a little funny when it came right back and he's like, it's a maybe, even though, you know, Jesse just said, just told him off in like a, you know, a real colorful language, you know, that right, I ain't gonna say, right. but I thought that was funny.
And then he goes off, Evan goes into a whole spiel about, him, Seth, and, Fogle's weekend and how great it was, when really in reality, it really wasn't that way. But at the same time, when I look at this film, mm-hmm. I think it's also, in certain terms, it's relatable too. Because, you know, when you're in high school, you want to impress a girl, you want to say what you got to say. And I feel like in that moment, that was Evan's character. He was trying to portray that. He was trying to put it off. Even though I feel like she knew that all he did was stay at home and play video games. You know what I mean?
Yeah, both of those girls are kind of calling their BS a little bit. They're like, I never see you at parties or anything. I mean, that's what right. You kind of do sometimes in high school. You front a little or just outright lie. But he had to fake the funk.
You got to fake, though. When you're in high school, of course you want to get your work done and anybody that may be in high school listening to this, you know, you definitely want to get your work done. You want to graduate. But really, at that time, you really don't have no bills like that. You really don't have no major responsibilities. So it's like, you can act like that. You can kind of play the game a little bit more at that time in your life. So it's kind of understandable.
I mean, well, as far as responsibilities, I don't know. Unless you're Antoine Fisher. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
It's definitely, it's cases, yeah, for sure.
I'm playing, man. What are you talking about? You about to really defend what I'm saying?
No, I was just going to say it's cases where you have people that, you know, in unfortunate situations where they do have certain responsibilities, but for the most part, that's really not the case.
Right. Hey, so going back to McLovin, though, the character of McLovin, I mean, that's a huge part, and that became like a really cult classic character or whatever, if you want to say, because of how he's
like, I don't mean to cut you off, but it reminds me of Volt and Pedro. Like, it was like the same, because I feel like this isn't as much of a cult film as Napoleon Dynamite, but I feel like the Pedro, the whole vote Pedro and McLovin was kind of the same wave. It was like social media before social media. Everybody in school, like, people, I heard people talking about vote for Pedro, was super bad. I hadn't even seen the movie yet, and I heard people talking about McLovin, you know, so they definitely made a mark, you know, with that character.
Yeah, he's basically a fan favorite, if you want to call it that. He did his thing. Yeah, he left his mark on the movie. I have to say, it probably is the most memorable character, just simply because of the absurdity of trying to get a fake ID and calling yourself McLovin or whatever. I mean, but yeah, you got to understand the stakes of the movie. They need this friend's fake ID to pass so they can get the liquor for this party, because they don't want to upset these girls that they're trying to get with. So it was a big deal when he came back with that ID that just had one name that said McLovin. And
I was going to say the organ donor from Hawaii.
Right. And the only other option that he had was, it was either that or Muhammad.
Right, and that wouldn't have worked when you look at, you know, his appearance.
I mean, well, which one would have been more believable? I mean, you feel like McLovin definitely would have the best option of the two.
That sounds more Irish. Like, McLovin sounds a little bit Irish to me.
Yeah, it does. I don't know, man. He could have. And Muhammad is a little blacker.
Right. Like, it's a little darker shade, I feel like.
I don't know, man. I mean, the McLovin was out there. I feel like he could have went full black with the name, and it would have been more believable than McLovin. He could have went, you know, Kareem Saeed, and I feel like it would have fit better. I mean, it would have been more believable if the clerk
or at least if he had a first and last name. Like, he just had one name.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That one definitely put it off. So he did what he could, man. He did what he could. I mean, he wanted it to be memorable, I guess. But yeah, it backfires, and you know.
Yeah. I gotta say though, well, first off, we gotta say he tries to get the liquor, and he's almost successful to the point where he handed the ID over, and I think the money as well. And he feel like he's in the clear, and then some guy runs in the store, punches him out, and robs the store. So he was that close. But I gotta say, man, I feel like, I don't know how you feel about this, man. I feel like Steph gave up on Fogle too quick. You know, like, his mind was so focused on the task that he was trying to accomplish. I just feel like he gave up on Fogle a little bit too quick in that situation.
What do you mean, gave up on him? Like,
Well, when he was like, he was like, Fogle's dead to us now.
Oh, okay, yeah.
At that point, after he got after the store got robbed and the police were there, but yeah, of course they were looking at it from the outside in. You know, they thought he was about to, you know, go to jail or whatever, but that really wasn't the case.
I mean, you said he gave up on him. Seriously, I mean, I'm going to use the things that he said. What did you expect him to do? Make a cake with a file in it and bust him out of jail? What was he going to do? It looked from the outside looking in, it definitely looked like he got busted and the cops arrested him and put him in the back of the paddy wagon.
Well, the thing was, they were still in the store when he was saying all that stuff. They didn't even put him in the back of the cop car yet. So my whole thing with that is, I just feel like, If I'm just thinking about it from a real life perspective, they don't know that you're with him, right? So that's a big parking lot. It looked like it was a few other stores there. I would have at least went on the other side and just chilled out, maybe had some snacks or something, eating some snacks, just chilling, and just see how the situation plays out. You know, I just feel like he gave up on him a little bit.
Would have sat on the side and got some snacks. Hold on.
You know, or something. I would have went to a store. I don't know. It looked like it was more stores in that whole vicinity, that whole building, whatever, wherever that building was at.
Yeah,
I would have did something. I would have just chilled out on the side, you know, a little bit away down from the actual, you know, convenience store, and just wait to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, just go in the next door, get a tattoo at the tattoo parlor or whatever, and, you know, just chill, wait for it to see what happens, all right? Look, it fit with his character, man. Look, he has a line in this movie where Evan asked him, like, do you want to get killed over liquor? And he was like, no, but I'll get killed over pussy, no questions asked. Like, so with that, with him saying that, I understand why he proceeded the way that he did with Fogle. He has a one-track mind, and
he's
done.
You're right. But that doesn't, and you're right, that's what his character was supposed to do. But as an audience member, we can still question it. That's the thing about reviews, films, watching opinions, and I'm just questioning his decision. I understand it was the best thing for his character, but that doesn't mean as an audience member you can't question what he did. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's a good thing too, because you look at it from a real life perspective. Like, I literally was like, if that was me, I probably would have at least like walked down the way a little bit and just waited to see if he actually gets hauled off in the police officer's car. I would have, you know, something like that. So I just feel like it's all a part of the whole review game and just as an audience member.
Yeah, I mean, time is of the essence. They didn't have time. What he said, like, both of them, him and Evan, pretty much made up in their mind that this dude was arrested. The cops came, you're not assuming nothing else, but, oh, he just got busted. What are you going to be like, oh, maybe they're about to let him off? No, you immediately said to yourself, okay, he's done. And now he's trying to keep the story moving. He's like, all right, it's plan B time. We gotta, you know, Fogle is a casualty of war right now. He knew the risk. We lost the girl's money. That's the other part about it, is that the money that Jewel gave to Seth, which he gave to Fogle, he's saying to himself, oh, the money's gone. All right, what are we going to do now? You know, we trying to stick to the plot, man. So I you know, I'm looking at it kind of like, look, I understand Seth's his moves, okay? You know, it's sad, but somebody go down to war, you got to keep pressing on.
Man, that's crazy. That is another comparison, though. What if that, you just brought up a whole nother angle in this film, you know? What if they were comparing that to war type of situation? I don't know. All the Easter eggs throughout this film, it could have been. But moving forward a little bit, man, this is where they split ways, you know, as you guys can kind of tell, where we're going with the review and with the story. McLovin goes his way with the police officers, and Seth and Evan go their way. Now, Seth and Evan they run into literally the right problem or the right solution, whichever way you want to look at it. It was a guy that was there in the parking lot, and he just so happened to back into Seth and run him over. And it was a little older guy, so of course, them putting their minds together really quick, hey, you can give us some money or you can buy us alcohol. So from that point, he invites them to a party that he's headed to. And, you know, so they're on their way on that quest. And then McLovin, a.k.a. Fogle, or Fogle, a.k.a. McLovin, he's not arrested. He pretty much ends up going on a whole side quest with the police officers, and it gets pretty wild on their side as well.
Right, right. They playing these cops as if they're like two like oblivious people who don't know anything, and or whatever. So again, from the outside looking in, we thinking that they're arresting Fogle, but nope, they're cool with Fogle. They love his name, the McLovin name on the ID, and they're like, okay, hey, we're gonna take you, you know, to whatever spot you was about to go to. But again, Evan and Seth don't know that. They think he's being arrested. So that's cool. Now on the other side of it, you know, this is where the paths diverge. So Fogle, McLovin is going off on his own side quest with the cops, which, you know, we need to mention is played by Seth Rogen and what's the other guy? Bill Hader. Bill Hader. Great, you know, a great pairing right there. That was a great cop pairing that they had going on there. And then on top
of it, I feel like they, not interrupt you, but I feel like they teased us with that too, because, and I could be wrong, but they didn't really do any other movies together, did they? And I just feel like they would have, and they had a decent amount of a role in this film, but, you know, it wasn't really focused around them. So to see them two in like a full film with starring them two, I feel like would have been a great film, but I don't know. You might know better than me. I feel like that's the only two or the only movie that they played together.
Yeah, I don't know of any of another one. I can't think of any. That I think that's it. But yeah, it was, you know, great pairing by the two. That's what I will say. But again, on the other side of that, you got Seth and Evan, who then go off with the guy who hit Seth, Joe Lotruglio, his character. And I want to bring up one thing. I don't know if you knew this, but just a small little research into, you know, some of the stuff in the film. When it began, they, like the people making this movie, they didn't really believe in Jonah Hill that well for the character. He initially was reading for Joe Lotruglio's character. And it was, a lot of it had to do with his age. Like in this movie, he's like 23 years old. And I guess they felt like they didn't know whether or not he was going to be able to play a teen. Now, good thing they came to their senses, because he definitely played the character very well. But yeah, it was just a little interesting that that they wanted him to be that guy at first.
Did they have anybody else lined up for his character, the character he ended up playing?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not too sure about it. I mean, going deeper into it, you know that the two people who wrote this movie, Michael, or was it, no, Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen, both of them, they wrote this movie when they was like in middle school. And I think they both were planning on being these two guys, Seth and Evan, which is their actual names.
Right, and everything. Right.
But they pretty much got too old, and yeah, they aged out of the role, so they could no longer play it. Now Seth, he still got himself in the movie, but Evan guy, I guess he never did.
Yeah, that was one thing I didn't catch until later on, like a few years, probably a few, not even that long ago, actually. I knew the whole thing about Seth Rogen and Evan actually writing this film back in the day when they were younger and wanting to play the role, but it completely slipped my mind that the names of the main characters are their names in real life. So I thought that was a pretty interesting, you know, not really a hidden gem, but if you're not really thinking about it, it'll kind of slip by you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely will.
Yeah, so just to hit on, I got a, you know, we talked about the recklessness of the police officers with McLovin. I mean, they were doing the most, man. I mean, it had me wondering what town were they in. I don't know if they were, I'm assuming they were somewhere in California, but I mean, they were going to bars, you know, shamelessly, openly drinking, you know, at the bar while on duty, you know, ordering 15 beers to go, you know, and actually getting it. I'm like, man, this is some wild cops, man. It's definitely some wild cops. But Fogle, I feel like they started to, he started loosening up around him. I mean, once he felt like he was off the hook. And I mean, they let him shoot their guns. I mean, they were doing donuts in the cop car. They were doing the most. But when it comes to Seth and Evan and their quest, their little side quest, they get to the party. This guy takes them to this party. And it turns out the guy that took them to the party that they were supposed to get the alcohol from, he wasn't even invited to this party. So it wasn't a welcome for him. And they're there, and they don't even realize that this dude isn't even welcome in this place. So they're just on a mission now to try to scavenge and get alcohol, the alcohol that they can. And I believe at this point, too, isn't this like the first part or first portion where they kind of get into it? Like they kind of start separating themselves as well?
Yeah, there's a part of this story we kind of neglected to mention is that there's a feeling of like a separation anxiety that's going on between the two, and really it's more so with Seth's character. You could tell that he's bothered. Like when you look throughout this movie, he's having some of his worst times when he's not with Evan. And you could tell he takes the friendship like very seriously between the two, even though they kind of fronted in the beginning of the movie again, where they was like, oh no, we don't miss each other. You could tell Seth, I always confuse the two, he feels real deeply about the friendship. But yeah, so there's definitely some issues going on, and he has a problem with Evan not being down with the plan. You know, they're trying to get this liquor real quick again for that party, and Evan he's not really down with it. He's just trying to get out of there with his life because he already seen the driver, the guy who drove them to the party. He already seen them get beat up pretty badly. So you know, he's the wisest of the two, basically.
Yeah, I would say that. He also got stuck in that room with the dudes doing cocaine.
Yeah, and had to sing his way out. See, I'm gonna bring up another point right here. This is another thing that, you know, I didn't catch till the thousandth watch. When he's talking to Joe Truglio, that guy, the driver, the person who hit Seth, for people who don't know this guy's name, this guy, he's sitting over there and he says, hey, do you guys know Jimmy? And he was like, you totally look like his brother or whatever. And so they already kind of set that joke up a little early on too as well, because later on when he's in that room with all those guys that he don't know, they're also like, hey, yep, no, that's Jimmy's brother or whatever. Oh, everybody's everybody's mistaken Evan for Jimmy's brother, whoever that is. Apparently it's some guy who can really sing well. And they mistaken him for him, and they want him to sing. So he's in this room now singing for his life, basically. And yeah, that was a good scene.
Right. So yeah, definitely at that point, Evan is ready to, like you said, get out of there with his life. And Seth, like we said from the beginning of the review, he's so laser focused. No matter what, he left Fogle behind. Fogle's dead to them. And now he sees the danger all around him, but the mission is still the same. you know. So that's where they kind of have their first kind of argument and separation. I think they separate at that point. And I mean, the dedication, man. I mean, the persistence of Seth, man, to get the alcohol. He finds the alcohol, and I think he fills up some. What was that? He said it was like some shampoo bottle, like a. It looked like a gas can to me when I first saw it, but he filled it up with the alcohol just so he could take it to the party.
Yeah, it was a bottle of detergent. Yeah, that they took.
Yeah,
and emptied.
Yeah. But, yeah, so yeah, they end up getting out of there. They end up escaping. I mean, luckily, but the trouble isn't done yet. They end up running into, and this is where paths start to come back together. At this point, they end up running into Fogle and the police officers. And the craziest thing about it, Seth gets hit again. It's for the second time. And it gets kind of tense, man. The police officers, seems like they're trying to pin it on them. They spill the alcohol, so the police officers see that they're carrying alcohol, which is completely hypocritical because they ordered 15 beers to go. You know, they're still on duty. But yeah, so everything comes back together. Fogle gets out of the back seat, and they realize that he's been with the police officers the whole time. And by the end of this whole scene, they end up making a run for it all together. So now they're on to the mission of getting to the party, the final party, the final scene. Well, not the final scene, but the final party of the movie. The whole, you know, point of where they were trying to go the whole time. So now they're on the path to get there.
Well, we got to rewind just a little bit because we got to hit on the point of the film where it's like everything is lost, you know, when they all run from the police and kind of like they all split up and then meet back up and everything's cool. I mean, not everything's not cool. It's a lot of tension, but they're on the bus. Fogle has no idea of the beef that they have right now, but they're on the bus. And the bum that was in the bar, he's on the bus with them now, and he's trying to grab the gold slick vodka or whatever it was, and winds up breaking that bottle. That was the bottle that was supposed to be for Becca, and now it's like, oh man, what exactly are we gonna do? But it turns out to not be of too much consequence. Evan really didn't even care too much about that. That was more of Seth's deal. He more so cared about the liquor and everything, but yeah, they come together and they hit that party, and they kind of doing their own thing. They trying to get at whatever girl that they were trying to get with at this point, and you know, this is where some of the funnier comedy comes to me in the movie. It's important to note that they both got different plans as far as how they were going to get with this woman. Seth was trying to get Jewel like crazy drunk so he can get with her. Evan, he didn't really care about that. He's doing his best to try to respect her, respect Becca, but Becca is like crazy drunk and it's like she doesn't really care about none of that. So it's just funny the way both of their situations, and it's important to know also that Jewel, you know, she doesn't even drink. He comes to find out that she doesn't even drink. So Seth's whole plan to get her drunk wasn't even going to work in general. And it's almost as if, you know, if they had switched and liked the other person, everything would have went well in their plans, but you know, it didn't go. But yeah.
Right. Yeah, it all wasn't what they expected. I mean, and we gotta mention too, Fogle or McLovin, it's a girl there as well that I guess he was trying to get with too. And out of all three, I mean, he's probably the most successful. I mean, when you think about the situation, but I got to bring this up too, man. It's crazy, like, when you think of stuff, and it's almost like an underlying lesson. I mean, the more we talk about this film, the more we unpack it. It's like, Seth and Evan did all of that when in reality, they really didn't have to, because they already had alcohol at the party before they got there. People was drunk out of their mind before they got there. So really, they didn't even need to bring alcohol. And when you think about it, Seth was invited to the party before he even brought up the whole alcohol thing, bringing alcohol for him. So it was almost kind of like, I feel like, an underlying lesson that they was trying to throw in there as well. It's like, you don't really have to, you don't have to lie to kick it, I guess. You don't have to really front. You can just be straight up, you know, by the end of this whole thing.
See, now hold on, because he didn't bring it up. She and her friend brought it up to him. They came to him and asked, could he get extra drinks for the party? So,
well, didn't she invite him to the party in the class though?
She invited him to the party, but it was later on. He didn't come up with the idea. Well, hold on. Let me see. Hold on.
Basically, what I'm saying is, he was invited to the party before alcohol was brought up at all. That's the whole point I was trying to make.
Yeah, but you made it sound as if he's the one who came up with the, oh, we got to get liquor for them idea. But she's the one who, after finding out that he was getting a fake ID, and I love that scene at the beginning where he acts like it's no big idea when they're in the Hobeck class. And she's like, Seth, it's dishes time. What's the big deal? And he's just like, yeah, we're getting the fake IDs. It's no big deal. And, you know, he's trying to play it all casual. But yeah, that's how it came about. He didn't come up with the idea. I guess they were probably just going to get their own, you know, before the girls asked. But yeah, they did have liquor there, but also he was pouring a whole lot of whatever he had in that detergent. They had like a little montage of him pouring up a whole lot of stuff. So I feel like he also provided to a lot of people whatever was in that. So I don't know if it was completely pointless on his behalf. You know what I'm saying?
Well, especially for, I feel more so for Seth, because it turned out she didn't even drink in the end. But yeah, I mean, I guess the main thing I was trying to say was he was invited, you know, alcohol or not. I mean, she invited him to the party, so I just feel like it was one of those underlying things that was trying to show.
Yes, he was invited to the party, but you got to understand what he said. He said that it was like she's trusting in him to provide the whole funness of the party, because she told him, could you get extra drinks? So he felt like he had a huge responsibility. You know what I'm saying? Now, again,
well, I'm saying, no, listen, I'm saying in the class, when she initially invited him to the party before alcohol was brought up, I'm just saying he was invited at that point, like before any alcohol talk came up. That's all I'm saying.
I understand that part, but what you're not understanding is he didn't want to just show up empty handed. She invited him, but then she also asked him to do something. So it wasn't just going to be a victory for him to just show up. He felt like he had to do this for her. So he could.
That's my point. It turned out he didn't even have to really do this.
Well, I don't know. But hold on. You only thinking of it in terms of, okay, she didn't drink. What about the rest of the people? She wanted everybody else to have a good time. So she wanted him to bring it. Because obviously she wasn't going to drink no matter what. She already knew that she wasn't going to drink. She wanted everybody else to have a good time. So even if he wasn't going to, which this is crazy that we talk about this, but even if he wasn't going to get her drunk, which was his plan, she still wanted everybody to have a good time, and she was trusting in him to bring some drinks for everybody to enjoy that. Because we only seen a couple of people, bro. What about, I guarantee you, there's people off camera who hadn't had a sip of nothing yet, and they were pissed off. That's the what the camera didn't show you.
Exactly, it didn't show you that. So I'm going off of what I saw. What I saw was, first off, they were already late to the party. You got to factor that in, too. Becca was drunk off her ass. All her friends that was out there had solo cups in their hand. I'm pretty sure they wasn't drinking water. And Seth didn't provide that to them. So people was already there drinking. That's the whole thing I'm saying.
Hey, and they needed more. They needed more. What do you want from them? You know?
You got it.
They needed more. You know, hey, maybe they were being selfish and it was just only a couple of friends who was, you know, getting their drink on. And again,
maybe.
But, hey.
But yeah, in the end, though, it pretty much wasn't all that they expected. Evan was pretty much the nice guy. He was trying to take the nice guy approach. But Becca, like I said, when he got there, she was already drunk out of her mind, and their experience didn't go good at all. She ended up throwing up on him in the bed. Seth's experience, like we kind of mentioned it already. He found out Jules doesn't even drink, and you know, he kind of confessed to her at that point. He was like, he thought that in his mind, he felt like he had to get her drunk in order for him to like him, or, you know, in order for her to like him or whatever. So,
yeah.
And she pretty much told him that wasn't the case, but then he kind of messed up even more. He ended up headbutting her hard as hell. And I found out that actually was a real headbutt. That's why they said Emma Stone's reaction was a legit reaction, because he really did headbutt her in that scene.
Yeah, it felt painful looking at it. When he passes out. But I gotta bring that up just a little more. These two characters, I mean, the way the situations played out and how he thought, you could tell he thought Jewel was going to be like a kind of an easy character to get, you know what I'm saying, if I just get her a little drunk, because she's kind of used to talking a little filthy and everything. So you kind of thinking in that term with him. And then on the flip side with Becca and Evan, the whole time you thinking Becca is like the more respectable of the two a little bit, and you get there and again she's drunk out of her mind, and she's acting like crazy loose at the time. And it's just funny how the situation's played out to where she's trying to get with Evan and Evan is trying to respect her her as much as he can, and she winds up saying to him something along the lines of, I don't see why you gotta be a little bitch about it or whatever, and you didn't expect that to come. But the funniest line of the movie to me is this. I've always remembered this line when Evan is in the room with Becca and they're trying to get to it. And again, she's drunk and she says to him, she's like, I'm wet. And he's like, he says, what did he say? He's like, yeah, they told me that would happen in health when I learned about it or whatever. And I always thought that was like one of the funniest lines in the movie, because Evan is constantly saying some of the cringy things that, you know, you might not want to say to a woman. But yeah, I just thought that was the funniest line to be.
They definitely had some all throughout, man. The dialogue in the film was top notch. I mean, that's everything that encompasses this movie is what makes it so great. The dialogue was definitely a part of that. But getting to the ending of this film, man, I mean, after the shenanigans of the party and everything going kind of haywire for them,
pretty much, I'm guessing it's the next day they kind of set it up. They end up going to the mall. They're pretty much at this point accepting the fact that they're separating, going to two different schools. And you know how these films end, man. They gotta leave you with a good feeling, you know, ending these type of films. So, of course, Becca and Jules are there in the mall as well. They run into each other. And, I mean, it's pretty much the separation of these friends, man. I mean, they pretty much go their separate ways at this point. He needed a comforter or something like that, Evan, for college. So he went, and him and Becca end up going off, and then Jules and Seth end up kind of leaving together. And I know you probably had something to say about how it kind of ended, man, because it's kind of, you had brought up a point to me a little while back that was kind of, I thought that was kind of pretty, it's pretty neat, man, how they ended this film. And it gives it even more meaning to me. Watching this film, it makes it even more than just a comedy, a raunchy comedy, in my opinion.
Yeah, just to fill it in just a little more, if you go back just a tad bit, like at that party, the police show back up, and it's the it's Seth Rogen and Bill Hader, these two cops again, and they're searching, you know, they're searching the house. And at this point, Seth and Evan, they kind of drunk so much, they both kind of passed out a little bit, but Seth gets himself back together, and he picks up Evan, who is passed out, and he starts carrying him out of the house, whatever, even though they've had their separation, they've had their fight or whatever. And he's walking and he's carrying his friend. I was like, hey man, that, you know, that's a you know, I felt like that was a big moment. I was like, hey, are you gonna carry your friend out the house? You know what I'm saying? I like this friendship a little bit, man. Maybe not everything, but I did enjoy this friendship just a bit, and everything that they did. Not everything, but yeah, he's carrying him out the house. And yeah, it's like they, I don't know, I guess they kind of hash things out. I think it takes place over the next morning. They go back to Evan's crib, and they wake up the next morning, and they talking, and you know, it's like all of this stuff has kind of gone from them. They no longer having that moment at the beginning of the movie where they was like, are we gonna miss each other? Ew, no. Now they're saying to each other stuff like, you know, I wanna go to the rooftop and just tell everybody I love my friend, or whatever. Like they, I don't know, they found like a new, it's like their friendship went to a whole new level in this moment or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And that's when, yeah, after that, they go to the mall and they just chilling together. And then, you know, they happen to spot Becca and Jewel also at the mall. And it's awkward because things did not go well at that party. Things didn't go any way the way they thought that it was going to go. But they meet up and they kind of laughing and joking a little bit. And they salvage the situation somehow. And they kind of, you know, it just works out perfectly. Becca goes off with Evan and he's going to drive her home. And Seth is, you know, with Jewel now. And they, you know, they going to wherever they going in the mall. But this end scene was definitely perfect the way that they did it. When they had the scene, it was just very simple. They just had Seth and Jewel going down this escalator, leaving Evan and Becca. And it was very important for that scene to take place. It was important that Seth needed to be the one to leave and go down that elevator, because you could tell he was the one who was having the hardest time being away from Evan. It was hitting him the hardest out of the both of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, so when he, it's like when you're looking at him going down the elevator, he's kind of looking back at Evan and everything. It's kind of like, you get the sense in your mind like, okay, he's dealing with it now. He's coping with, okay, they may have to go their separate ways. Like, we cool with each other, but, you know, that's how life works sometimes. You're not always friends with, I mean, you don't always stay with the people that you grew up with or whatever. And I just thought that was a good scene. Like, you could just really tell in his face that he was coming to terms with it. Like, okay, you know, we may have to move on, but I'm at peace with it. So I felt like this movie had a lot of heart in it in that way. And that was just a great ending scene. So that's what I got out of it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I was going to say, man, at first looking at that, you can kind of say, well, maybe they never hang out again. Or maybe they part ways, you know, for good. Or who knows if they hang out again. But when you look at it from a real life perspective, you know, bring up the facts of, you know, Seth Rogen and Evan, what's his last name? Goldberg. They're still cool to this day. So if this story was loosely, I guess, based on them at that time in their life, and they're still cool to this day, to me, that kind of, looking at it from a real life perspective, I guess, kind of brings a little bit of, okay, they might have went their separate ways for a little bit for school or whatever, but they're still cool, you know, at the end of the day. So that's how I try to look at it.
Cool.
Okay. But that's pretty much it, man. That's pretty much the film, Superbad. They definitely leave you with some heart in this film. It's got a mixture of that raunchy comedy. But it's definitely more than that. And I think if you don't really look for it, you really won't find it. You'll just really see the comedy in it. But it's a lot more to it, as we kind of explained. For me, man, I'm going to get to the point, man. For me, I'm giving this a 4.8 rewind. And it's pretty much almost perfect to me. You know, I mean, it's not too much more I can say about it, man. I mean, if you've seen this movie, I feel like you love it. I haven't met one person that says they don't like this movie. So that's a 4.8 for me.
You know, I like to criticize your ratings. Now, what was off that caused it not to be a 5? What was the 0.2? You know what I mean? That caused it to not be a perfect movie for you to say 4.8, not a 4.9, not a 4.7. I got to give it a 4.8. It was just
you
missing.
Really want
to
know?
Yeah. Give it to me.
The soundtrack.
Oh, wow. Okay, bam. Hey, I like that. I like that. All right. That came back into play. All right. Hey, well, the soundtrack didn't do for you. Hey, I'm going 5 rewinds, okay? 5 rewinds. Do you hear this? Do you hear this? Not even just the instrumentals that they were playing in this. Again, the music was top notch. I mean, it was perfect the way that they did it. A teen comedy with the 70s funk music behind the soundtrack. Perfect. Everybody was funny. There wasn't a character that was wasted. Everybody was funny. I was interested in the story. I love the friendship that they had. And again, as we spoke of it, it's a very raunchy. It's one of the raunchiest movies you're going to watch. Don't get me wrong. One of the raunchiest. But I'm amazed at how they were able to inject some heart into the movie and it still be raunchy at the same time. I don't know too many movies that have done that other than Superbad. So with that being said, it's 5 rewinds. And yeah, that's what we're rolling with. But
okay.
But yeah. So with that being said, hey, that's the review of Superbad. The greatest comedy, I think, of maybe all time. Hey, I'm think I'm willing to say that. You know, maybe not you, but this is like a top five film for me for sure. Like of all genres, it's in my top five films of all time.
I can't jump off that ledge. I'm not gonna disagree, but I just gotta look up some movies, man, before I say that.
It's definitely in there for me. I've been saying that for years. But with that being said, that's the review for this. Next episode, we are going to be doing 2002, All About the Benjamins. Okay? We're going back to another comedy. So again,
Mike Epps.
Right.
Ice Cube.
Right. We're going, another pairing. You know? We'll see if it's as funny as Superbad just was. I doubt. Now, that being said, we're going to leave y'all with the trailer for that. All About the Benjamins. We thank y'all for listening. Peace.
In the city of Miami, 20 million in stolen diamonds is about to change hands. Wait a $100 bill, yo. Now, the baddest bounty hunter in town is on the case.
It's a whole lot of money out there. All I gotta do is put my name on it.
And there's only one man who can help him.
First black president. Dun, 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 dun.
It was some kind of diamond heist near the beach today. I accidentally hit in the back of the damn crook's vein.
Get in! Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
You don't believe me?
Hey.
You're a kind man and you're always trying to get over on people.
What the hell are you looking at? Poop dog!
Okay, we partners, because you're going to help me find the diamonds. But I'm the boss.
Okay, partner. I mean boss. You the boss.
Dig in my pocket, I want you to get something for me.
Wait a minute, we ain't that close.
In a partnership like this,
let's just shoot out the back tire!
Only one thing counts.
Linda!
It's all about the Benjamins.
Let me go and get my tooth from all my pain and suffering, you know what I'm saying?
Put them back.
I'm getting earrings like Allen Iverson, fool.
Put them back.
Ice Cube.
A little more grip, a little less lip.
Mike Epps.
Look at your hairline. If you was in the army, you'd have to snoop like this.
Yes, sir.
I want you to put me all in chrome and put me on the front of the Bentley like this.
It's all about the Benjamins.
Come on.
How's I'm supposed to get down from here?
Jump.
Better not let me hurt myself.
I'ma catch you.
Jump.
Oh, damn. Sorry about that.